The talk show welcomes everyone's calls once per hour. Dial 928-1350 and tell Northeastern Connecticut your story.
Good morning, Northeastern Connecticut, and welcome to the WIY Talk Show on this third day of August, Monday. Good morning, everybody. Dave Ward here with you through 11 a.m. Normally at this time, we'd be checking in with the Attorney General. Well, we're giving him a little break this week. He'll be back with us next Monday. We have a number of questions that I've collected from many of you, so we're going to hang on to those, and we will connect with him next Monday. We're going to get to more of the show and some important items to talk about. We have on the line with us this morning guests from the Northeast District Department of Health. You know them well. Sue Starkey is with us, Director of Health, and Linda Colangelo, Education and Communications Coordinator. Good morning, friends.
Good morning.
Thank you for the time this morning. Sue and Linda, a news release came out from the Northeast District Department of Health very early this morning, outlining some things that maybe some folks here in Northeastern Connecticut weren't ready to hear. But there are some facts that you need to share with us, primarily around 16 to 19-year-olds and an uptick in positive cases in that age group. Sue, can you just kind of lay out the basics for us as far as what we're talking about here this morning?
Thanks, Dave. Yes, the press release went out that let people know that we recently received an increased number of laboratory-confirmed cases of COVID-19 among 16 to 19-year-olds. As of Friday, there were 20 cases. As of this morning, that's increased to 22. The cases have been seen in towns across the district, different numbers, 4 from Brooklyn, 3 from Pomfret, 3 at this point today from Eastford, 2 from Plainfield, 1 from Canterbury. This number comes as quite a surprise because there were only 13 cases reported in the past 4 months. And to suddenly see this number of cases show up within 1 week means that something's going on. And NDDH does do contact tracing. We call up the cases, we find out who they've been with, we try to do a little background information, and in addition to the calling the people who are impacted, we hear some of the rumors in the community and the rumors that are going around that appear to be being borne out are that it's because people this age aren't following the rules, there are social gatherings. It shouldn't come as any surprise to anybody. This is what's happening across the nation, across the state, and it's happening here. We're on the call right now to just remind people to take every step to protect themselves, because it doesn't just happen in faraway places, it happens here.
So, Sue, in the news release, you had talked about this. Is it okay to call it a spike? Is it a spike? What would you call it?
I would call it a spike or a cluster. It is an unusual occurrence of disease, because we haven't seen this happen in the entire time that we've been working on this.
Okay.
We've been had an outbreak.
Fair enough. So it sounds like, in the news release, you talked about how this could have occurred via an out-of-state party. We've heard a lot about this big group of students on the beach in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, coming back to Connecticut, Northeastern Connecticut, closed a restaurant, Sweet Evelina's. What else are you watching around this event, and what is going to happen next? Do you have any ideas? Will it keep expanding?
That's one of the things that we're definitely interested in watching, because we know that people have been saying it doesn't cause severe illness among young people. We're hearing that it does. It doesn't easily spread by young people. We're seeing that it does. And what we will be watching for is secondary transmission or transmission within families to see if those kids are passing it out on beyond their own age group. That's one of the things that we'll be watching for. But I have to tell you, that there's more going on just based on the phone calls that I've been getting from towns, from schools, from daycare, from businesses, calling to say there's somebody there who tested positive, or there's somebody there who was probably in contact with somebody who tested positive, and they want to know what to do. We've been sending this message out for months, and people, you know, have kind of set it aside because it doesn't impact them. Well, over the past week, it's just mushroomed to where lots of places are realizing that they need to take action to protect their business, their staff, the community. So we're still talking about those public health practices. Know the symptoms. Know that you need to stay home if you have those symptoms. Know that you need to keep away from other people, even in your own home, if you have those symptoms. If you go out without symptoms, or if you go to work because you're well, you have to wear your mask, keep your distance, wash your hands. All of those things are what's going to protect any of us. Linda has been working on these messages forever. It's the same principles that we talk about for, well, for other infectious diseases. We haven't had the masks and requirement, but our message hasn't changed.
Sue, the 22 cases, are they all attributable to that one party?
We can't determine that because the contact investigations take some time to complete. They're only complete if we actually reach the person, the case, and that hasn't always been easy. So this is an important time to let you and everybody know that we really need people to answer the call and answer the questions. If we call when we're trying to investigate an outbreak, we need to reach you to find out who else might have been infected, because we want to call them and tell them everything we can do to protect themselves.
Sue, I'm going to ask a silly question. Linda, jump in here on the silly question, if you would. My phone rings. I'm just hypothetical. My phone rings. I don't recognize the number. I don't answer it. I send it right to voicemail. Does a contact tracer leave a voicemail? Because I can imagine that if I get a voicemail saying, this is the Northeast District Department of Health calling, please return this call, I might at this point along the line maybe freak out a little bit, but that would get me to call. Maybe others might have a different view of it. So what happens? Walk us through what happens.
Sue, I can jump in just to also let you know, Dave, that this is part of the state's surveillance system, and if you allow me, I just expound on that a little bit more. So contact tracing is a long-standing public health practice to prevent the spread of disease and diseases like COVID-19, and we do this by identifying the people who are positive and then the people who they came in contact with to be sure that those people know how to take care of themselves and protect others. So contact tracing is done on the close contacts of laboratory-confirmed or probable COVID-19 patients. And by close contacts, we mean if you've been within 6 feet of somebody for more than 15 minutes, you're considered a close contact. And the investigative work really relies on what Sue just said, you know, participating in these investigations and answering the call. You just set it up perfectly because that's exactly what happens. Your phone will ring, and in this particular case, the state system is called CONTACT, and it's C-O-N-T-A-C-T for Connecticut. It will come up as a COVID contact, or they may see a number that is 855-670-0299. And what's so important, and we know that there's a challenge here because, of course, you know, when you're talking about adolescents who maybe did something they weren't supposed to do, they snuck out, they went somewhere, they gathered with friends, it doesn't have to necessarily be at a big party, maybe it's just not taking the precautions just because you're gathering with any amount of people. So they may be understandably a little bit nervous. We don't know how much information they're going to tell their parents. If they're underage, obviously we speak to the parents. If they're 18 or older, we speak to the individual themselves. And it's not until we can identify commonalities in an investigation that you begin to connect the dots. So I've been saying, again, this is hypothetical, if you have a 16-year-old in Brooklyn, a 17-year-old in Plainfield, an 18-year-old in Pomfret, it's not until we can actually have these conversations and find out, you know, where they were and when their symptoms began and things like that. So if all three of them at some point in that investigation say a common word, or if they say, oh, I went to this party in this place, and the 16-year-old, the 17-year-old, the 18-year-old says it in, you know, these three different communities, that's, you know, those are the aha moments where you start to connect the dots. And every answer is like a compass that leads us in the right direction. So it's vital, it's very, very important to the success of contact tracing to make sure you answer the call first, and then you answer those questions truthfully and accurately.
All right, fair enough. Linda, when we talk about contacting individuals, how does it work contacting state by state? We understand this took place in Portsmouth, New Hampshire at a couple of bed and breakfasts. Are you doing all that investigative work, or is the State Department of Public Health doing all that investigative work to talk to the bed and breakfast and those businesses? How does that part work? Because now we've got multi-state business going on.
Sue, jumping in to say, in general, the conversations take place state to state. So some of that would be the State Department of Public Health making the call, but we focus on what's happening with the residents in this community. It is harder state to state, but we work around that. One of the other things that's really important is just district to district. Some of the cases that come in, say, and work in Northeast Connecticut come from Rhode Island, like you said, or maybe just another town outside the district. So the state contact system allows us to work with them, see some of the same data, and we also have really strong partnerships so that we can call them up, ask for help, let them know what's going on so that we give each other updates. But another thing that I can tell you is it's getting increasingly hard to keep up with the pace. There are so few people that work at the health department with so many more responsibilities related to COVID-19 that we struggle, but we still get so much work done. But it's getting harder, and we are, you know, really advocating with the state to release funds that were made available through the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention for state efforts, and those funds are expected to come down to local health departments. We're just letting them know that we need them, those monies, sooner rather than later.
I want to get into a couple of those related topics as well. I need to take a quick commercial break. I have more questions for the two of you, and I know that you have more information to share. So if you'll stay with me, let's take a break, and we will return with more of the talk show coming up next.
For 50 years, there has been a local organization that puts heart and soul into its work. Hi, I'm Angie Vaillant-Gendro from Matulitis Rehabilitation and Skilled Care in Putnam. If you require rehab after a hospitalization or surgery, we will care for your physical needs while attending to the whole person. Our holistic approach and special expertise in spiritual care for people of all backgrounds is what sets us apart from other rehab centers and nursing homes in the area. Patients are likely to recover better and thrive more quickly when they feel like human beings and not just a knee or a hip problem. Perhaps you need a place for mom or dad while you're on vacation, or you need to consider 24-hour or end-of-life care. We can help. If you have surgery already scheduled, talk to us. You can tour our rehab wing featuring mostly private rooms with your own shower and bathroom, and you can meet our compassionate, competent, and dedicated staff. Call us at 860-928-7976 and see us online at matulitisnh.org. Come see where good conquers.
Sometimes our food is more than just food. It's an integral part of our community. So this year, Discover is giving $5 million to support Black-owned restaurants. To places like Rodney Scott's Barbecue in Charleston, Post Office Pies in Birmingham, Back in the Day Bakery in Savannah, and hundreds more places in your local community, all across the country. Learn how you can show your support at discover.com.
This is the sound of a blizzard treat at DQ, but it also sounds like a weekend bike ride, a post-game celebration, and a sunset on the dock. Wow, doesn't a blizzard treat sound good? Stop by DQ and grab one today, like new Oreo fudge brownie. Thanks for being the sweetest fans in the world. DQ, happy tastes good.
The Killingly Parks and Recreation Thursday Night Concert Series continues at Davis Park in Danielson. This Thursday night, it's Dynamite Rhythm, a five-piece rock and roll band with music from the 50s, 60s, 70s, and fun for the whole family. Showtime is 6:30 Thursday night at Davis Park, Main Street in Danielson. Bring a blanket or a lawn chair and bring your dinner too and enjoy a free concert with Dynamite Rhythm, presented by Killingly Parks and Recreation. And coming next Thursday night, the great Garage Band Reunion.
Welcome back to CarMax Will Buy It. Let's jump right back into the action. A used minivan with 200,000 miles. Cassandra.
CarMax Will Buy It.
That's correct. The car you're driving now. Cassandra again.
CarMax Will Buy It.
You're on a roll. Any car at all, no matter what. Jerry?
Is the answer CarMax Will Buy It?
That's right, because CarMax buys all the cars, no matter what, no questions asked. CarMax will buy it.
Do you have something to say? Pick up the phone and dial the WINY Talk Show now. 928-1350 is the number to call. Our telephone lines are open. 928-1350.
Whenever you call me.
Welcome back to the WINY Talk Show. We're getting an update from our guests from the Northeast District Department of Health. Sue Starkey is with us, Director of Health, and Education and Communication Coordinator Linda Colangelo. We're both on the phone with us as we're talking about a spike in positive COVID cases from 16 to 19-year-olds. Sue and Linda, let's talk a little bit more about these numbers. We heard from Dr. Deborah Birx, who is the coordinator of the White House Coronavirus Task Force, say yesterday on one of the Sunday morning shows that she's seeing a spike, an uptick, a surge in rural communities that is now on par with what's been happening in the cities. So as we look at this new number that we're talking about with 16 to 19-year-olds, what are you seeing for Northeastern Connecticut in general across all the age groups?
So it's Sue, and we are seeing the numbers slowly increasing, but not as dramatically as what was seen among this 16 to 19-year-old age group. So the numbers have slowed down over the past few months, but there appears to be an uptick starting now. I don't think it's a coincidence that the stay home, stay safe rules are going by the wayside. More businesses are opening. More outdoor events are being allowed. So people don't memorize the exact rule about how many people can be at an outdoor event or enforce it. It just seems to me that it's a free-for-all. People are going out, relaxing, and letting down their guard, and it's leading to more infections. And it's not surprising that it's happening in rural areas because we knew it would take a long time, but it would roll out here. Once certain number of infections start, and that number doubles and doubles and doubles, it will increase. So we need everybody to do what they can to take a few steps back and go back to practicing everything they can to be safe as strictly as possible.
And Dave, there's the other piece to this too is the, as we mentioned, it was somewhat predictable. You know, we have to realize, and I hope we all can remember being 16, 17, 18 years old. You know, it seems like a forever ago. And, you know, we're living in a very, very, very different world. And these kids have endured a lot of social isolation. We've talked about the fact that, you know, they've lost out on, you know, their last year of schooling, whether it included graduations or proms, and, you know, all these types of things. So, you know, the desire for children and young adults to want to get out and socialize and be together is certainly understandable. It's the way that we have to manage that to say, for an unknown amount of time right now, and that's the hard part. We can't say, look, if you could just do this for one more week, you know, then we can all get back to normal. If you could do this for another month. The problem is we can't see around the bend. You know, we're on this very long journey together, and there's lots of twists and turns on it. I've been saying appropriately, with the backdrop of a hurricane coming up the coast, it seems like we've been in the eye of that hurricane for a couple of months. We've let our guard down because, you know, the sun has come out and we don't recognize it anymore as what we saw in February and March when it was cold and it seemed like, yeah, this is a stormy time, both metaphorically and literally. So we did, you know, on many fronts, we could see evidence of people letting their guard down, people getting tired, people, you know, I just can't do this anymore. Then we slipped into this phase of business reopenings and the sheer distraction of trying to figure out how to open safely, trying to keep businesses afloat. You know, these are monstrous things that people are trying to do to preserve economic health as well as physical and mental and emotional health. So these are indeed tough times. We understand it, but that will not move us off the dime of what our messaging has been from the beginning. And just for, you know, more specific numbers that we did put in the press release, as of July 31st, we had 374 cases reported in the NDDH district, which includes 12 towns in Northeast Connecticut. 119 of those cases were among those people who are living or working in institutional settings, such as correctional facilities and nursing homes. So when you exclude those, you have 255 cases in the kind of, I want to say, the community at large. So even when you hear those numbers, we don't want people to be lulled into this false sense of security, saying, well, how are you even going to compare, you know, 374 cases to the thousands we're hearing about in Florida and Texas and California? Well, you know what? In order to get to numbers in the thousands, you had to pass 374. At one point, those communities were at 374 too, and then they raced past it. We don't want that to happen here. We took some kind of, I don't know, you know, community pride, in a sense.
Yeah, pride is a good word. Yeah.
You know, community pride that we were talking, you know, back months ago, like, come on, Northeastern Connecticut, we're doing a great job, and everybody keep following the rules and keep doing what you're supposed to be doing. And just like a hurricane, you know, has that backlash, that back end of it. I think perhaps that's where we're going to find ourselves. We're seeing this spike. We're seeing, you know, mini clusters into clusters that may lead to outbreaks, and that's why this is a cautionary tale. That's why we are grateful for WINY and all of our media partners and public health system partners in Northeast Connecticut that share the news and say, let's keep ringing the bell. We just have to keep ringing it a little louder, perhaps this week, to say something's happening. It's not just in the 16 to 19-year-olds, that's the most prevalent piece that we're seeing. But it's happening, and so we need to increase that level of awareness and take every precaution we can to avoid the numbers going in, you know, continuing to rise.
Sure. Linda, I'm going to take this opportunity to challenge the two of you, because I know inevitably when we switch over to open forum, this usually comes up after we have our conversations. The Northeast District Department of Health is just being alarmist.
Right. Yeah. We share that quote a lot from 2007 that says, you know, anything you do prior to a pandemic or any kind of, you know, difficult news you have to share, you know, you'll be accused of being an alarmist, and after the fact, you'll be accused of not doing enough. We walk a very difficult line of sharing necessary information. You know, tomorrow I'm going to be back at 7 a.m. on Gary's segment on his morning show. And folks will rejoice because I'm not going to talk about COVID-19. But I'm going to talk about something else that you have to be cautious about, and that is Eastern equine encephalitis and West Nile virus and mosquito and tick-borne diseases. So, you know, we get it. We, even as health educators in public health, we kind of get tagged as, oh, here comes the voice of gloom and doom. And it's not that. We're the voice of prevention. We don't want to see you get sick. We want to make sure that you avoid the things that land you in the hospital, the things that, you know, take away your good health, the things that take you away from family members and your work and your retirement, and the things that you work so hard for to protect and preserve. We're an entire industry that's about protection and preservation and prevention. So, don't you want us with you on this journey?
Fair point. Sue, let me ask you. Kids don't get it. Kids don't share it. Kids aren't affected by it. But now we're talking about 16 to 19-year-olds. How would you categorize 16 to 19? Would you just at this point categorize that age group as equal to the adult susceptibility to COVID-19, and is there a difference for kids that are younger?
Thanks for that question. I am not making big distinctions between the different age groups because there isn't clear data, because we've been so good at keeping kids home and keeping them protected. We don't know very well how easily the disease will spread once you bring those people under the age of 20, for example. Once you put them together, disease transmission is going to change, and we just saw it happen. So based on what we just saw, I don't believe that infection rates are lower among young people. I have heard the stories from those we've called up already who said that their children are very, very sick. So it isn't less severe in all cases. So everybody needs to be cautious. There's one thing that I want to say about the grouping that we put together, 16 to 19-year-olds. Now, we know that school-age students tend to be more in the 16 to 17-year-old range, might be 18 by the time they graduate. But we didn't see any reason for limiting the analysis to just the school age group, because they tend to gather with people 18 and 19. So that statistic that shows what's happening in that age group is what's really important.
So that leads me to my next question. And within your news release that you shared with everybody overnight, the increase in cases in northeastern Connecticut among young people comes at a critical time as school officials are trying to make the determinations about how and when to reopen schools. based on that statement, do you have an opinion? And will you share it with us as to whether or not you believe schools should go back into session in the classroom in a few weeks?
I don't see any easy way for schools to implement all of the requirements to keep schools safe. Despite their best efforts, there'll be gaps that they can't get around. So I'm convinced that it's safe, but I am definitely convinced that every single school system is doing their best to prepare to open up. What I really believe has to happen is that they are very strict about their rules to exclude those who have symptoms that might be signs of COVID-19. And right now, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, is putting out a message that said maybe those symptoms aren't COVID-19. Maybe you can send the kids back early after a day of feeling better. It's my opinion that that is not sufficient to protect the students. If students and staff have to go back to the school, they deserve to have a safe environment that excludes anybody who might have symptoms of COVID-19.
Also, Dave, if I could jump in as well, what makes it exceedingly challenging as well is when there is confusing messaging that may not necessarily be conflicting, but it certainly causes confusion. And people will be more apt to adopt behaviors when it makes sense to them, when there's a very logical, you know, A to B, okay, I get it, and that's why I'll wear the mask, and that's why I'll do
it. It's a very binary thing for a lot of
people. Yes, it is, absolutely. So what has become confusing is for months now, we have had very clear messaging that talks about quarantine and isolation, and if you think or you know that you had COVID-19 and you had symptoms, okay? So there are 17 symptoms listed for COVID-19. And if you had any of those and you think you had COVID-19, the guidance is that you stay home for at least 10 days since your symptoms first appeared, and at least 24 hours with no fever or fever-reducing medication, and your symptoms have improved. That's when you can get back into work. That's when you can be with others. So that is what we have for the general guidance for community. When the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention dropped all their guidance documents last week for schools, what Sue is referencing is they specifically talked about students, and they said, well, you know, we're going to suggest for students, you know, there's a dire need to get them back into the classroom for a long, long, very valid list of reasons. But when it comes to screening them for symptoms, and imagine how monstrous this will be for school nurses, for teachers, for educators to be screening kids for symptoms who will have any one of these 17 symptoms on any day of the week at any moment. So the CDC guidance was, we're going to suggest that you adhere to your existing school illness management policies. And what many of them are in our schools is a, you know, 24 hours fever-free and, you know, with symptoms improving. So that doesn't apply to teachers and staff and employees. Teachers and staff and employees, if they go to the school nurse with a headache, they may be out for 10 days. But if the child goes to the school nurse with a headache, they may come back in 24 hours. That is a very, very hard message to reconcile.
Well, I think just alone, Linda, I mean, you just got a lot deeper in the weeds than I was thinking. But just alone on those 17 possible symptoms, how do you know that it's not? Are you going to quarantine somebody for allergies? If they come into the nurse's office with a headache,
one of our superintendents
who was in on the show, I can't remember which one off the top of my head, but said, what if a kid comes in dehydrated, and all he or she is showing is signs of a headache?
Right. And so that's you, that. Go ahead, Sue.
Thanks. I bet it was every single one of the superintendents and school nurses who's asked the same question about deciding whether or not it's COVID-19 or something else. As soon as there's a sign or symptom, assume that it's COVID-19. Send them home and ask them to seek care from their medical provider to make sure that they rule out something that isn't COVID-19. But if you're not certain about whether it's COVID-19 or not, I'm saying it's better to play it safe than sorry. And one of the things that I'm suggesting now is that everybody, all the parents, all the students, just download one of those self-symptom screening forms and look at it every single day and see whether or not you have the sniffles or whether you're tired or fatigued, whether you have a headache. Because if you're the kind of person that has a headache every single day or is tired every single day when it's time to get up and go to school, it's not COVID-19 when it comes up on the first day of school. It's just your normal state. So those are some of the ways that people can start to.
So that's where you would draw a line of delineation for folks.
Right. Knowing your baseline health. So if you have allergies, well, you know that your nose runs or you've got the sniffles or your eyes itch and, you know, you're sneezing a lot. If you know your baseline temperature, what your temperature typically is every day, knowing your baseline health, Dave, is going to help you recognize new symptoms that might be COVID-19, but that information is also going to help your healthcare provider, your school nurse, to make a more accurate determination about your risk.
How do you do that with 16 to 19-year-olds who might not necessarily know their baseline health? Like us older folks.
Well, there are.
I'm talking about myself,
forms.
Not the two of you.
You can download one of the forms too. We can share that, but people should just be looking at what their baseline status is so that they know when it might be COVID-19. I'm one of those people that tends to think, oh, I think I had a touch of COVID-19 in the spring, because if I gather up everything that happened to me over a course of months, I had lots of symptoms. In reality, I know I probably didn't have it, so I shouldn't assume that I'm safe. I need to monitor my symptoms on a day-to-day basis to make sure that I haven't been infected by the coronavirus that causes COVID-19. So just being aware of the symptoms is really important. Just looking for something that's new and different is really important.
All right. Thank you. Let me take another break. I have a couple of more questions for you. So if you'll stay with us, we'll take another quick commercial break and we will return with more with our guests from the Northeast District Department of Health and the updates that they're sharing with us this morning. Stay with us.
This story is called The Ugly Truth About Timeshare. If you think you've done your family a favor by buying a timeshare, you need my help. Hello, I'm Chuck McDowell, CEO and founder of Wesley Financial Group. 10 years ago, I started helping folks cancel their timeshare contracts, and in the process started what's now called the timeshare cancellation industry. Timeshare is the only thing that you can buy that you can't tell me how much it's going to cost or when it's going to end. When you buy a timeshare, you give them a blank check to fill out any amount they want for annual maintenance and assessment fees. Sound crazy? The crazy thing is, this never ends. Stop the insanity today. Call my office now. I guarantee if we can't cancel your timeshare contract, you'll pay nothing.
Were you lied to when buying a timeshare and want out? Get the facts about timeshare cancellation. Call Wesley now for your free information kit. 800-837-5050. 800-837-5050. 800-837-5050.
The Quinebaug Valley Senior Center is distributing free coupon books from the Connecticut Department of Agriculture's Senior Farmers Market Nutrition Program. Each coupon book contains 6 $3 coupons, which can be used at our local farmers markets. For your free coupon book, come to the touch-free drive-through distribution event Monday, August 3rd and Wednesday, August 5th from 9 till noon at the Quinebaug Valley Senior Center, 69 South Main Street in Brooklyn. For more information, call 860-774-1243.
The Putnam Business Association Pluck a Duck tickets are now on sale. Just $5 per duck and 55 fabulous prizes to win, so get your duck tickets today. You could win a $500 Visa gift card, a Troy-built lawnmower, a Generac portable generator, numerous gift cards, and so much more. For a complete list of prizes, go to putnambusiness.org. Purchase your tickets online at discoverputnam.com or stop by Putnam Bank, the Putnam Economic Development Office, Bank Hometown, and right here at WINY. The PBA Pluck-A-Duck event is powered by Jewett City Savings Bank.
Huh? Could you say that again?
Could you repeat that?
What's that?
Sorry, what did you say?
Huh? Say that again?
I beg your pardon?
I didn't hear you.
Does this sound all too familiar to you? This is Ralph Campagna. If you have hearing loss, you are not alone. For over 30 years, we have provided this community with a wide range of solutions for hearing problems. Today's hearing aids are so discreet, the uncorrected hearing loss is much more noticeable. Let us help you get back into the conversation. We make it easy and affordable.
Amplisound Hearing Care Center, 19 Quinebaug Avenue in Putnam, has reopened on a select appointment basis. Call 860-315-9656 for an appointment. Or visit us on the web at amplisound.com. Amplisound, great hearing, excellent value, nearly invisible.
Do you have something to say? Pick up the phone and dial the WINY Talk Show now. 928-1350 is the number to call. Our telephone lines are open. 928-1350.
Whenever you call me.
Welcome back to the WINY Talk Show. We are talking with our guests from the Northeast District Department of Health. Some new information coming out today of a spike in positive cases for older teenagers, 16 to 19. Linda and Sue, I'd like to get just a little bit more into this latest development. And it says in the news release, through our case and contact investigations, we were able to link some cases to a multi-day out-of-state gathering in mid-July. Is Hampton Beach, New Hampshire, correct? Is this where this originated?
This is Sue, and I can say that the place Hampton Beach was mentioned in some of the calls, but there aren't enough dots to connect, to paint the picture on that. But we know we've heard that mentioned enough for us to put up a red flag. And say, yeah, it's a gathering place that has a high likelihood of being the place where this all started.
Sure. And then it went on to say, we also determined that many parents and officials were aware of the gathering. If parents are on top of their game and they've heard the news, does that surprise you? That parents knew about the gathering?
No, because I've been a parent, and I know that there are things that I found out about after the fact.
Sure.
So there's no holding that against them, and nobody's trying to put out any blame. What we're trying to say is, you know what, between us, somebody knew what was going on, and lots of different people talked to different people, but we didn't talk to each other to shine a light and say, wait, this is going on. So NDDH is doing that today. It would have been nice if there had been a full-blown picture a few days ago, but it wasn't clear yet. So as soon as it was clear that something was going on that we could put our finger on, that we could tell others about, we put it out there with the message that we are your partners. We are the people you call when you have questions. Call us when you have some information. Call us when you want to try to collaborate and cooperate and find solutions. Sometimes the work will fall to another agency, but we can help them with ideas or support them with some of our information. The perfect example is what's going on with schools right now. School boards facing tough decisions about the model that they'll use for the upcoming school year, in-person, hybrid, virtual. And they will take this information about cases that might be circulating in the community or whether or not young people are impacted. But they're going to be adding to that the information that they get from their principals and facilities managers. What do our buildings look like? Do we have enough space for people? They'll be talking to the bus companies about the ability to drive people in, to their finance department about whether or not they have the money to adopt a particular model. They'll talk to their medical advisors to say, you know, what about our protocols that we have in place with our school nurses? Are these sufficient? So they can call us because we have some of the information that they'll use, but they're calling on a lot of people to make a decision that is relevant to a larger community.
I also want to add just a couple of notes about making sure people understand the flow of information, because we may not be on a person's radar. We may not be on a person's list for them to think, oh, you know what, I should call the health department about this. Now, we have a few folks sitting at NDDH right now, and Debbie and Tracy and Megan are great staff who are always answering the phones, who will disagree to say, no, everybody calls us for everything every day. And we do. We get, you know, dozens and dozens of calls, both related to the regular work of a public health department, and then in these unprecedented times, all of the layering for all of the unknowns that people need answers to. So, you know, what we have a formal reporting system whereby COVID-19 is a reportable disease in the state of Connecticut. So healthcare providers and laboratories are required to report the diseases to the Connecticut Department of Public Health and their local health department. That's the primary way that we're going to get information about these cases. So then those reportable diseases are entered into the state's main electronic disease surveillance system. It's a huge database that not only includes COVID-19, it includes tuberculosis and influenza and Lyme disease and everything that's a reportable disease. From there, they extract out the COVID-19 information of positive cases, and that goes into this contact tracing system that we were talking about, the contact tracing platform. And I wanted to correct some information. If it comes up on your phone, it comes up as CT COVID trace is what it comes up as. But so every day, our public health nurse, she monitors those surveillance systems. And every day she opens it up and says, okay, we've got cases here. And gosh, maybe we have to follow a foodborne illness. Maybe we have to follow a lead poisoning case. Maybe we have to follow COVID-19. The informal reporting structure that's in place is our reliance upon healthcare providers, elected officials, concerned citizens to alert us as when they identify conditions that may impact the health of the community. So yeah, if a few weeks ago, if parents were talking amongst themselves, if school officials were kind of hearing some rumblings, that would have been a perfect time for somebody to pick up the phone and say, hey, FYI, NDDH, we rely on you a lot for information we know, but it might benefit you to know that, you know, that put this on your radar. We're hearing of some kids who may have snuck out of the house or may have, you know, gone to this certain place, and we're hearing rumor. Sue has a great line that says, you know, when you hear something at the speed of rumor, it will outpace data, it will outpace information systems, it will outpace everything. And social media has been a game changer in the face of COVID-19. When you learn...
How do you filter out the incorrect information on social media versus
the
true pieces?
That's like asking everybody, how do they do it? Yeah. How do you look at anybody who has posted at any given point in the day? What is your knee-jerk reaction? Are you like, gee, you know, this is my friend Linda, and this seems out of character for her to post something like that? Maybe I should check into my friend Linda and see where she's at, or where did she get that information? This is why you're going to hear from a health department that we're always using verifiable sources. We work with Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and Health and Human Services and our community partners. And, you know, it's scientifically driven when you're hearing from us. You're never going to hear us say, oh, we heard on Facebook today that we may have found out something
Although,
from Facebook.
With this,
but
in some ways we have.
No, but what I'm saying is that's exactly it. We may have seen, somebody may have brought something to our attention, but that becomes part of an investigation. You just heard Sue say, I can't really confirm that Hampton Beach is the place. Enough people are starting to utter those same words that we're connecting dots. But
and
all
I want
of
to
us
jump
have...
in on the connecting the dots piece, because we get the reports that are verified by laboratory tests. We can't have people calling up and saying, you know, so-and-so is a case or this person is a case, because that's not verifiable. We don't necessarily need every single person to call us with all the information that's interesting, because we don't have the capacity to put it together like a puzzle.
Right.
We generally would like people to work in their systems. If you have a business, talk to your employees. If you have a school, talk to your staff. But if you are a school or a system and you see something going on and it looks like conditions or a trend or something that you can put your finger on,
that's a flag, and that should be shared, right?
Yeah,
very good. We're coming down, Sue. I'm going to run out of time. I'm sorry to cut you off. We're coming down to the end of the show. Thank you for sharing this valuable information for us. We hope people are listening clearly. Masks, wash your hands, social distance, all the things that we continue to talk about are also important. Thank you both for joining us. We'll be back in the next hour with Governor Lamont. Stay tuned.
1350 AM WINY Putnam and 97.1 FM W246DN Putnam. Online at WINYradio.com.
Tropical storm. I'm Mike Moss. The U.S. is in a new phase of the pandemic, and Dr. Deborah